Welcome to Big Broadway Energy, the podcast with your host, Stephen Reardon. That's me. Thanks for being here, podcast listener. I know it's been a minute. Happy 2026. We took a brief hiatus during the holidays, but I'm happy to say we are back, and this is our first official podcast episode of the year, and it's a doozy. Right across from the park from us, greatness is happening at American Stage. And that greatness is a thrilling, provocative adaptation of arguably the first true classic American novel, and if not, certainly the first classic American heroine. We are talking, of course, about The Scarlet Letter. Not only is the play great, but the cast of this production is truly exceptional. And I know I say that with every show. Get off my back. But this cast is really, truly unreal. And today we have two members of the incredible ensemble with us. Anala Navlekar and Gerard Lobo, my new friends, welcome to Big Broadway Energy.
Hey,
thank you so much for having us.
It's so exciting to have you in the studio. And right now we're recording this on Friday, January 23rd. So the show is opening technically tonight.
Yes.
We are ready. And so when the show airs, we'll be open and ready for an audience. So let's first do a quick synopsis of the story for those who know the book and sort of know the name, but maybe haven't read it since they were forced to in high school. So Anala, why don't you kind of give us a brief tutorial of sort of like what The Scarlet Letter is all about?
Okay, yeah. So this adaptation by Kate Hamill is based on the 1850s novel by Nathaniel Hawthorne. It's set in the Puritan Boston, Massachusetts community. All these the people who have come from the old country into the new, who are navigating this new land, these new beliefs. And the story is, I guess, now I'm wondering if I should like talk about the original or the adaptation. But the way I look at Scarlet Letter is it truly is a love story at heart. Mm. And it's following a couple of different characters. Hester Prynne, who gets ostracized and condemned for being adulterous, having a child out of wedlock. I'm not going to give any spoilers.
No.
I shouldn't.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a classic story. I don't think we should spoil it, but I think people kind of know it.
But the thing is, I didn't know the story till I read the play.
Mm.
So to me, it was very much a surprise of who the father is. So I'm not going to.
We're not going to tell that.
I'm not going to say that. No. Yeah. So the story basically follows her journey of, I guess, redemption and, finding herself again and just kind of explores the cost of holding secrets for many different characters across the play.
So true. We're going to talk a little bit about the secrets that all of us keep in this play a little later, because it is true. It's like the secrets really are at the core of this very human story. I also love American Stage for a lot of reasons. It's cool for us local actors a lot because they will cast local actors, but I love it when they bring people from out of town. And you're both New York-based actors, having come to share your talents with us in Scarlet Letter. What was so special about this script for both of you? And Gerard, why don't you tell me about like what spoke to you about this version of this story?
So having studied the novel in school at various times and then reading this adaptation, it just really struck me how Kate Hamill was able to bring the different perspectives of each character to life where there really are no villains. And if we had to really put a needle on something saying this is probably the crux of sort of the play, I would say that the fact that there's no villains and everyone has their own perspective. There are people that do some bad things, hint, hint, Chillingworth maybe, isn't the most savory character in a lot of the scenes, but he has a background. He kind of has gone through what I would consider sort of like a PTSD of a soldier coming back from war. Then how do you deal with that when you want to go back into society and you've gone through these horrific things that kind of just really don't make sense? Okay, you know what? Leave it for the stage, all right? We will work this out on stage. This is what I'm dealing with.
I know.
See what I've
but
come
you
back
see it every night. And it's
a harrowing journey?
It is quite a harrowing journey. Quite 90 minutes of a harrowing journey, but I love the look. You were getting the side eye big time from that. I love that.
Constantly. Love that. This is how it was in the old world before the new world. As well, so
exactly.
Just like everyone to
another reason I'm so excited to have you on this show is because I'm lucky enough to be part of this incredible company at Scarlet Letter. I'm the male swing, which means I'm covering the male presenting roles should one of the three incredible actors playing the male presenting roles be out for any reason. And I've been watching you both in rehearsal just for the past few weeks, and I'm such a nerd, man. I'm such a fan of the work you're doing. Like, for me, I was excited to take this opportunity because full disclosure, I had auditioned for a couple of the male roles and I did it. My choices were very different. So when I saw what was happening on stage, I thought to myself, I'm experiencing this play for the first time, like, I really saw it in a different way. And I'm so excited to watch how you built these relationships. Like, I just thought it was really fun. And I'd love to hear sort of Anila and Gerard talk to me about how you created the characters. And obviously, Hester Prynne is like an icon of American literature. So it's like a tall order to play someone like that. So I'd love to hear your POV on how you created the characters.
I think for me, it was making a lot of mistakes in the room. I think a phrase that all of us in the rehearsal room have been saying is go strong and wrong. Mm. So I think it's just making a really strong choice and just testing it out. And either it'll work or it'll fail, but it gives you a lot of information. And I think that everybody in the room has been so game to just try different things. So I think that's been a big part of my process, which has been a really, you know, fun discovery for me. In many ways, though, you know, Hester is, she's very complex. She's very complex and she's not perfect, which is juicy, you know, as an actor. I don't know, just the conviction that she has, the boldness that she has is something that as a contemporary actor, woman, that's something that I can kind of tap into. And it's really exciting to be able to unleash that at a time when that was not okay, or like that was heavily judged or
forbidden.
Criticized. Yeah, forbidden. Yeah. Forbidden, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just about making discoveries each time with this relationship. Chillingworth really has a deep love for Hester, but he can't bring himself to really lean into that after, you know, where you walk in and your wife, whom you love, that you did horrible things for to get back to her, is now pregnant with someone else's child.
Yeah.
And, you know, just leaning into that, leaning into having to... I think one of the things that Arpitha, our awesome director, posted everywhere in the rehearsal room was, don't forget, in the Shining City on the Hill, eyes are always on you. So what does he have to do in order to stay in this community, to have no one else think he's doing anything wrong? He actually is a good doctor trying to help people, but also needing to know this secret. So with those two things conflicting with each other, how does he navigate that?
For sure. That's what I kind of wrote down here, and I wanted to talk a little bit about it. You know, the duality that he has. It's so fun to watch, and it's got to be so fun to play, because this idea of you coming back, not because you have this new skill of being a doctor as the most exciting thing, but reconnecting with your wife. And I mean, in the first minute and a half of this play, 2 minutes of this play, the audience realizes that not only is that not going to happen, but now you have created a whole new sort of, I don't know, a whole set of challenges that you have to work through and live in this thing. And was the duality hard to find for you?
It was not that it was hard to find. I think it's something just allowing yourself to continue to discover. Mm. I mean, I just was today, something just a discovery just came to me with regards to the relationships. I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to play with that.
Right.
You know, so I think it's just being open to making strong choices, maybe feeling like that was a little wrong. That was okay. Let's lean into that. Does that work? You know,
so that's
just
so
continuing,
true.
Continuing to explore.
And it's really fun. Like I said, fun to watch. Every rehearsal, there was new things to sort of take in, and it was just fun to watch both of you sort of find these people that are so steeped in history and so many people know about them. But what I love about this translation is it feels like a fresh story, like you said, Anila. Like, if you've never read the book, if you've never seen any of the adaptations of this classic story, you do not need to be brought up to speed. Mm-hmm. You can come and see this play, and it's a totally new experience for either for people that love Nathaniel Hawthorne and love the novel, or, you know, hate the movie that was done, you know, a bunch of years ago. If you've never seen either of those things, you can come and experience this as a brand new experience. So, Anila, what was your favorite part of this adaptation specifically?
Hands down, my daughter, Pearl.
Yes.
I mean, the thing that blew me away about this adaptation in general was just the amount of humor that's in it. And you know, we're two previews in at this point, and to see what's resonating for the audience is just, it's great, you know. But yeah, my favorite part of this adaptation is Pearl, that I hope I can say this, but she's being played by a puppet, and Noah, who's operating the puppet, is doing such a lovely job. But Pearl is just, what is it? You know how we have those like moments where intrusive thoughts come in, and Pearl.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
You don't say.
And Pearl
that you
is
don't
someone,
say out loud, but
yeah, don't say out loud or don't actually do. And she's someone who constantly acts on her intrusive thoughts, and it's so chaotic. I love it. I mean, to play her mother in the scenes, it's so frustrating. But I'm like, oh my God, as an audience member, I'm like, this is going to be great.
It is. It's so true. And Noah Friedman is a local favorite. We love her. She's been on American stage for many years, and she does bring such a different point of view and really makes this puppet feel like a real character. And it reminds me of like some of the more contemporary shows that we've been seeing on Broadway. And you know, I just recently saw, beautiful play. Based on the movie Life of Pi.
Oh my God!
And when
yes.
it was on Broadway, I got to see it. And after the show ended, we got to stick around and talk to some of the puppeteers. And when you find that art as a part of another piece of art that's being created as one thing, you just forget. I mean, I forget that Pearl's a puppet. Noah is so good at what she's doing. You're so good at responding and reacting. You know, and Gerard, you have some really fun moments with Pearl as the puppet. Now, Pearl is this, you know, she's a precocious four-year-old, right? And so she looks at you as not as scary or anything. She's like, what's your problem? And she tells you exactly what she thinks of you. And she tells everybody what she thinks of them, which is so much fun. Yeah. I love it. I really do. And I agree, Anala. It's such a awesome part of this translation.
It's also so relieving. Sorry, it's just so relieving to have someone who just speaks their mind, especially 100%. in a you know, cast of characters that are so repressed, cannot speak on what what they're actually thinking and feeling. Here's Pearl, who's just like, hey,
guns
you know,
blazing.
Yeah,
it's so true because that's you know, we said at the top of the show today, this play really is about secrecy and how not only does every character in this play have kind of just their own bevy of secrets, and with each scene you're like, wait what's happening, who is that, who is she kissing, these things that are like, wait a minute, what's going on, but the secrecy is really at the heart of the show. But then Pearl is this comic relief, maybe unintended or intended, I don't know. But like last night we watched the preview and the audience was with you guys like second to second.
There were some very loud gasps
and very quiet moments, and then Pearl shows up and she's like, that's a stupid reason to be praying. And you're like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. Because all of us know kids like that, right? Yeah. I love it. And we said a little bit earlier about Kate Hamill, who wrote this version of The Scarlet Letter, saying there are no villains in the play. As actors, it's got to be really, really fun and challenging to get that note at the top. So I would love to hear your thoughts on, like, what does it mean to play these characters not as villains, not as heroes, just as humans in this very, very flawed city on the hill?
So I feel like with Chillingworth, when he comes to find out what's happened with Hester, he has to stay there because he needs to know from a human standpoint. When you've ever been had to deal with like infidelity, it's like you just need to know. Yeah. But also he's still figuring out his life philosophy. It's like, how do I go through life now? She's still my wife. We're still technically married. I still have to be here. And how do I navigate that? You know, so it's you have to find sort of what the connection of the relationship is with each person. So with Dimmesdale, with the governor, so working to become a pillar in this community while I still have to deal with this person.
Uh-oh. And obviously, you know, I think we said it that Arbita, our director, said at the very top of this rehearsal process that Hester is, you know, one of the first original heroines in classic American literature. Do you see her as anything more than... Not anything more, but obviously she's very layered. But she is, you know, the person, she's the protagonist. Do you feel any other kind of way about Hester in any kind of moment? Do you feel like, is there some sort of villainy? Is there some sort of, you know, things you're trying to stay away from? What I love about what you've brought to Hester is you have created a three-dimensional person when women were not viewed that way. How hard is that to do in a story that is so clearly obvious that you're not on the same wavelength as the men?
Yeah, it's challenging because I think the trap of playing a character like Hester is that, you know, she's a victim or that she's so pure, or she's so, you know, nothing is wrong with her, but that's not her, you know, and we see that especially when she's dealing with some of the other characters like her daughter, you know, she's a single mother, she's raising her daughter. We see how she's dealing with Goody Hibbins, who's always just, you know, talking
in your
down
business.
To her. I know. I was about to
get a life, Goody Hibbins.
Yeah. So I think leaning into Hester's I don't know, edgier side was definitely challenging, right? Because then you're like, oh no, like then does this justify what has happened to this person? But it's like, no, it doesn't. Because even if, you know, you stand up for yourself, how that's perceived by somebody else is it's not in your control, but that doesn't justify the type of humiliation or punishment that, you know, that someone can face. Yeah, so it's been challenging to find those like edgier sides to her and like not fall into the trap of being a victim.
Without a doubt, and yeah. It reminds us all that this is a very relevant story.
Yeah.
This is not something that happened in the 1600s and now doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
This whole idea of equality, we've been fighting for it for, you know, as long as we've been alive, for
and
sure.
Women and autonomy. Oh. I mean, just literally 2 days ago, there were people protesting on the corner of like Central and Third or something,
mm-hmm.
for abortion rights, mm-hmm. and I was just like, oh my god, let's go.
This is still happening.
It'll never end.
Right. Governor Hibbins has a great line in the play, which I'm not going to say, but he talks about a woman's right to choose, but he ends that sentence in a very different way.
Right.
And it really does like put into perspective
yeah.
what women have been
it's
fighting
so
for.
It's so binary.
Also, we had a preview last night. I was in the audience. I said before we started recording, I don't think I've seen an audience that big at American Stage in a really long time. And then as I was leaving American Stage, I heard from more than one person, well, that's the best thing I've seen at American Stage in five
Yay.
Years. And I was like, yeah, I mean, this audience, St. Pete is really ready to be entertained and inspired by all of your work. And because we are so lucky to have such thriving artists here in St. Pete, I always like to ask my guests at the end of the show how they use art in their lives. And as professionals in this business, it's your livelihood, obviously. So let me just adjust that question a little bit for you both and just ask why art was the direction that you both wanted to go in as a career. Because both of you have very thriving careers in New York City. Gerard is, you know, a recognizable face from a lot of shows. And Anila went to the Yale School of Drama. I mean, there's a lot of intimidating talent when I walk in that rehearsal room that I feel so honored to be part of. But how do you use art in your lives, and why was art your choice to kind of continue in your life?
I turned to art at a very, very young age. And I think, of course, besides it being fun, it was a way for me to be my most potent self that I find that I couldn't be in my regular life, right? Mm. Because always people are like, that's too big, that's too loud, you're too much, you know? And I find art, specifically theater, specifically acting, allows me to go really far. And I like living there, you know? So to me, art is not a form of escape. It's a form of like connecting deeper to myself. Mm. And through that, then connecting to other people. And I think it's always lovely, you know, anytime there's a piece of theater done or a film and I get to talk to people and see what's resonating for them. It's, you know, that. I know people can't see what I'm doing. I'm interlacing my fingers together. it makes me feel in touch, grounded, you know.
I love that.
Yeah.
Gerard, what about you?
I'll piggyback off of just pursuing art, creating a really deep connection within yourself, because I came to it later in life. I was not someone who at 5 years old was like, I want to be an actor. It's just not something that I thought you were able to pursue given my, you know, upbringing. It just wasn't.
Sure.
And so it wasn't until I was close to 30 that I actually seriously started pursuing it. And to date myself out to the ether, that was about 17 years ago. And I was very fortunate to be in New York. So just being able to train with incredible teachers and exposed to just this community of people that I never explored before. And when a certain point in my life when you just sort of feel numb and you don't know why, and just being like, what really scared the hell out of me that I never thought I would ever be able to do? And lo and behold, so
here you are,
dance class. And so it was just that kind of thing where you kind of get a little exposure, then more and more, and before you know it, you're like, damn, this is what I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
But I think that the front loaded end of life, like, I think I appreciate it more for myself and what it does for me and my life. If I hadn't had that, you know, first 30
life
years
experience.
Of life. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I always say, well, actually, Helen Murray, the artistic director of American Stage, I interviewed her on the show a few weeks ago, and I asked her that question, and she said, you know, theater is an act of service. And I was like, oh, wait
wow.
a minute. It totally is an act of service, because I've always been service oriented, and I've always wondered, like, why do I need to make these people see or understand what I'm trying to say? And it's like, oh, I'm trying to serve their minds, I'm trying to serve their hearts, I'm trying to serve their ability to connect with community. And so I love that answer, because I do think it's really that idea of like bringing what you had in the beginning of your life to wherever you are and doing something artistic, and then like people responding to it and connecting to it. And your work as Chillingworth is going to connect to a lot of people, I think. And your work as Hester, Anila, is going to remind, again, everybody
the fight we still have to fight and the solidarity we have to be with together to keep those things happening.
Well, I think it's a reciprocal thing. Like, the more that you can find in yourself and connect with the role or what you're doing, and the more you're really being truthful with that and bringing it to someone else, they recognize that. And then yeah. there's like this exchange with the audience when you're actually bringing a story to life with your cast and with the audience. And it's that's really something special that I haven't experienced in other things.
Yeah, so. Without a doubt. And you have a very dramatic cape.
Sure.
Dramatic capes help.
The cape acting really puts a button.
If you like cape acting, everybody, you cannot miss The Scarlet Letter, because every single one of these lunatic actors have capes that are going to change your life. I love it. I love the dramaticness. The dramaticness, is that a word? I love the drama. I love the lighting. I love the capes. I love the whole vibe. The Scarlet Letter opens on January 23rd, which if you're listening to this, it is open. We're ready for you to come and join our incredible company. And it remains open until February 15th. Tickets and more info can be found at AmericanStage.org. Trust me when I say you do not want to miss this production. Anna Navlikar and Gerard Lobo, thank you so much for being on the show. I'll see you at work, right?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Stephen.
See you at work.
So thanks good for having to us. See you on your opening day. And I know that's a big ask, so thanks again for being here. And thank you, dear listener, for joining us on Big Broadway Energy. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the show, email me, will you? BigBroadwayEnergy, all one word, at gmail.com. And if you're here for the music, don't forget about Big Broadway Energy, the radio show, every Sunday at 5 p.m., only on RadioSt.Pete.com and Sunshine 96.7 FM. Until next time, friends, be kind, be curious, and keep creating. Bye, everybody.